Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
There's a lot of different moving stories out there about the intersection of the world of the coronavirus and sports. I want to start off by telling you that the numbers continue to trend in a really, really positive direction as many states are officially beginning the process of opening back up. I know a lot of you out there listening in the state of Texas, in Georgia, in Tennessee, in South Carolina, in Oklahoma, among others, all of those states are opening up to varying degrees, and much of the rest of the country is following. I saw where Colorado is making moves, and the data out there reflects that we are now on the backside of the curve. In fact, the deaths have peaked, that the cases have peaked, hospitalizations have peaked. We're on the backside of the curve, and we're starting to hear discussions that are more forward-thinking. A lot of different universities are starting to weigh in with whether or not they are going to be open, and almost uniformly, they're saying, yeah, we're going to be open for the fall. Among those universities that has said that they will have classes, Michigan, Miami, Iowa, Iowa State, Purdue, Nebraska, Missouri, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Washington State, Oregon, all of those big schools that have said they plan to be open for the fall. And if they are open for the fall, that means we're going to have college football and a return to normalcy in many ways. And I think that's a healthy return for our country. And in fact, if you look at the data, if you look at the IHME model, which is out there, which the White House has cited. If you look at that model, by June the 1st, which isn't very far from now, June the 1st, there will be almost no deaths, according to that model, occurring from the coronavirus in the United States. So we are dropping precipitously. The last 2 days are two of the lowest total deaths in the month of April. Yes, Sunday was the lowest in the month of April. Yesterday, which is Monday data, was one of the two or three lowest days for deaths in the month of April as well. So we're stringing those back to back. We had the fewest number of total new daily cases in the month of April yesterday. So things are moving in a very positive direction in terms of the coronavirus. And as a part of that, I believe it's time for sports to start to consider in earnest returning, and certainly the NBA opening up its facilities in many of the states where there have been shelter-in-place rules. Also, I'm going to be honest with you. The data reflects that lots of you out there, regardless of which state you're in, are tired of sheltering in place. And if you looked at the beaches in California over the weekend, in Orange County, they were packed. And a lot of people are looking at the data and they are saying, and I think this is fair, if I am young and healthy, I need to maintain my distancing from older people and people who may be unhealthy, but I need to be out working to keep the economy rolling. And I think there are a lot of people of that impression more and more every single day. And that's because the data reflects that young and healthy people are not in danger from the coronavirus. You're just not. And the president of Purdue came out, Mitch Daniels, and said as much. And I think this information is important. He said, you know, there's almost a zero danger from the coronavirus for college-age kids. And that's true. If you are young and healthy, you are more likely to die of the flu than you are from the coronavirus. And people say, well, why do you talk about this stuff? And I think it's important in this day and age, like ordinarily, I can come on and I can give you a bunch of opinions about something that happened in the NFL draft. But I think what's significant right now is getting America back working and back to normalcy. And in order to do that, I think people with me, with big platforms, need to be sharing factual data so we can get sports back sooner. And so I'm reading from Dr. Katz, who is a this is from Thomas Friedman's column in the New York Times. And I wrote, and you can go read all the data that I laid out over the weekend talking about the same thing. But people are like, well, you're not a doctor, so why should I listen to you? Well, okay, yeah, you're correct. I'm not a doctor. I went to law school and got a graduate degree from Vanderbilt in law school, and then I went back and got another graduate degree from Vanderbilt instead. If I had wanted to go be a doctor, I could have been a doctor, right? I would have just had to go to school to be a doctor. It's not like I wouldn't have gotten in med school, and it's not like I wouldn't have been smart enough to be a doctor. I went for two other graduate degrees instead. When you listen to me, the question you have to answer for yourself is, do I trust Clay Travis to give me honest facts and to accurately interpret them to the best of his ability? That's my pledge to you, that I am going to do that. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to like me. But I am going to give you factually accurate data because I think that's important. Now, there's a difference between facts and opinion. I will give you the facts, and then I will give you my opinion on top of it. You can agree or disagree with my opinion, but it's important to me for you to realize that the foundation of my opinion is rooted in facts. And so this is from a doctor, though, in the event that you're out there like, why are we listening to you? You know, this is from one of the nation's foremost epidemiologists being quoted in Thomas Friedman's New York Times column over the weekend. Reading directly from him, these are his quotes. More and more data are telling us that COVID-19 is two completely different diseases in different populations. It is severe and potentially lethal to the old, the chronically ill, and those with pre-existing conditions. It is, however, rarely life-threatening, often mild, and often even asymptomatic among those under 50 or 60 in generally good health. And he says that the best means by which we should be behaving as a country going forward is sheltering the vulnerable is a good idea, but we also have to allow those who can return to the world most safely to do so, thereby restoring the economy, supply chains, and services while cultivating the collective protection of herd immunity that leads to the all clear. That's how we get our lives back without waiting on the long and uncertain timeline of vaccine development. This is beyond a shadow of a doubt what smart public policy would be encouraging us to do. We don't need to quarantine the entire nation. We need people who are elderly and vulnerable to continue to quarantine and limit their interaction. The rest of us who are fortunate enough to be young and healthy, which is the vast majority of the American population, we need to go back to work. And we need to get the economy rolling back again. And as part of going back to work, I think we also need a huge national volunteer force to be able to help people who are in difficult straits, both health and age and financial related. That's what needs to happen. So that's my opinion on the coronavirus in general. And also leagues and colleges and athletes need to be smarter about this thing. They need to understand that they, meaning young, healthy athletes, are not in danger at all from the coronavirus. If you are a young, healthy athlete in this country, you are more in danger from the flu than you are from the coronavirus. And to my knowledge, we haven't closed down any athletic event for the flu ever. Now, I'm not saying the crowds need to come back necessarily. And I'm not saying whether crowds should be back in the weeks and months ahead. I think the safest thing to do is start sports back up without crowds present. But athletes themselves are not in danger. And I think that's a big, huge, important fact here that is not being discussed enough. Athletes are more likely to die of the flu every year than they are to die of the coronavirus. So those are all facts. crazily. All right, I mentioned that I was going to discuss this. I'm going to bring it up with Petros as well. Right here in the middle of the coronavirus, the government just dropped. Have you guys seen this now that I just tweeted it out?
Yep.
The government dropped news that UFOs are real. Did you see this? I'm not saying necessarily that aliens are real, okay? But the government has acknowledged that UFOs are real, and they have released video from Navy pilots off the coast, I believe of the East and the West Coast, of these pilots following unidentified flying objects and reacting to them.
That video's cool, man.
Have you guys seen those videos before?
I remember one of those videos going around the internet, and everybody was arguing whether or not it had been doctored.
Right, whether it was real or not.
Yeah.
And now the government has come out, and they have said that these are 100% real. The Pentagon released UFO videos, and you can go find these UFO videos if you want. By the way, how about the pivot from me all in on the coronavirus, giving you all the facts there, and then I'm like, all right, but now I got to go into this UFO story. The Pentagon released these videos, and if you watch these Navy videos, you can hear the pilots reacting to them, and they're like, there's no way that this could be, that this is anything we've ever seen before in our world of understanding.
Yeah, and the different directions that that alien aircraft is moving in is crazy.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, do you remember the Disney movie from the late 80s when we were kids? I think it was called Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah.
That's what that spaceship reminds me of.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty wild. Had you seen this, Dub?
I actually have, and it's funny that this is now becoming, that the government just dropped this on us like this, but
right in the middle of the coronavirus, the Pentagon just comes out and says, "Oh yeah, by the way, UFOs are real."
Corona news dump.
And can you imagine how much attention this would ordinarily get if we weren't in the middle of the coronavirus?
It'd be extraordinary. But
I mean,
is this
a decision by the Pentagon to drop it now because they're like everybody's paying attention to the coronavirus? They won't even notice that UFOs are real.
It's like the NFL dropping news on Friday afternoon while all the shows are going to the weekend. But
yeah,
one of these pilots was actually on Joe Rogan's podcast maybe a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And he breaks down the video while he's talking to Joe Rogan, and it's incredible. It's like, I mean, it's pretty long,
these
but I watched it.
These things leaked a couple of years ago, these UFO videos. And like Danny G said, there was a huge debate, oh, this is doctored, this is not real. And I think that like the New York Times wrote about it. But I mean, this is one of the eternal mysteries that's been out there. Are UFOs real? And the Pentagon just said, yeah, like these are UFO videos. We have no idea what this is. And we're just going to drop it right in the middle of the coronavirus.
I have a funny feeling that Clay is going to ask me to book one of the aliens.
Love to get the aliens. I'd like to get somebody
up.
Try to track down that fighter pilot. I mean, we got plenty of time. Look, we got 3 hours a day, and we probably aren't going to have many sports for the month of May. So I don't think there's any harm at all. I mean, I'd love to get some of those guys on to talk about it.
4th of July is going to be crazy, man.
I think every sport is going to be back on the 4th of July. Maybe the aliens will come
exactly.
to those sporting events, too.
Yeah, we were laughing during the commercial break. I sent you and Dub a copy of the meme. It says, things will be back to normal in July, and then July, and it's the big UFO yeah. hanging over New York City.
What? I mean, 2020 has already been an insanely crazy year. What if aliens just came to visit this year, too?
Yeah. Wouldn't
people
be surprised.
Like, people are like, it's April. You know, it's kind of been a crazy year already. And then, like, finally we get through the coronavirus. You look at the data, like, by Memorial Day, this thing hopefully is going to be passed. And then everybody's like, man, I'm just ready to kick back and have a beer and just chill. And then the freaking, I almost cursed there, the freaking aliens show up.
They came at a wrong time. The coronavirus is going to kill them all.
What are the aliens going to do? People are like, what? You know, I was just thinking I was going to be able to pay my mortgage again, and then the flipping aliens show up. I mean, you want me to pay my credit card bill? And the aliens just rolled right after the coronavirus. They're just like, hey, what's up? Yeah, we're real. What's up now, bitches? I mean, I don't know.
Suddenly, we have to social distance from aliens.
So now that the government has confirmed this, are all the tinfoil hat people that normally are always saying these are real, it's a government, are they going to flip flop now? Or are they going to say no, this isn't real?
That's a great question. Also, like, what else is out there? I sound X-Files now, but I'll give you an example. Like, I'm a big believer, not in most conspiracy theories, but I do believe there are things that most of us don't believe that are 100% true. And they sound crazy, right? Because you're talking about the tinfoil hat wearing people. And I'll give you an example. In Washington, D.C., there was a house in a neighborhood. And I went to college in Washington, D.C., so I remember like the rumor. There was a house in a neighborhood, and people were like, that's a CIA house. It's in a neighborhood. Like, the people going in and out of there are so weird. Like, it's not real. You know, like, they're not like normal people who live there. And it was a rumor, and everybody would talk about it in D.C., and it was like, yeah, but it's, you know, kind of crazy. It's a secret government house. It turns out it was a secret government house, and they had dug tunnels underneath this house all the way underneath the Russian embassy to try and listen in the Russian embassy. And the people who were going in and out of that house all the time were government agents conducting covert surveillance underneath the house, right? Yet if you were the person with like the tinfoil hat on being like, that house is, you know, is a secret government house and they've dug tunnels all the way underneath it to go underneath the Russian embassy, people would have said what? They would have said, you're crazy,
you're,
man,
nuts.
You're nuts. And it was 100% true. And that happened while I was in college. And ever since then, I've been like at least open to the idea that many things that we think are crazy and filled like lunatics raving, like there might be some truth to them. Not all of them. Like, I'm not a tinfoil hat, huge conspiracy guy, but there are probably a ton of things right now that you and I dismiss on a daily basis as crazy that actually could be true. And the UFO thing coming out now and getting dropped right in the middle of the coronavirus is like, okay, you know, I'm sure that when the New York Times got tipped off about the fact that the Pentagon had a secret UFO-related group investigating these videos that have now been released, the reporter who got it was like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, these people are crazy. But it was 100% true. And then of all the times that the Pentagon could basically say, oh, yeah, by the way, UFOs are real, they just drop it right in the middle of the coronavirus. And the other thing I would say is there are lots of things that would sound crazy that if you didn't, like, if you don't have the technology to prove that it exists, it sounds crazy. Let me give you an example. Before the microscope, if somebody had been like, hey, every little thing is made up of, like, a virus is so little that we can't see it. But if we had this incredibly high-powered way to make everything look that's not visible, suddenly visible in a microscope, you'd be able to see that viruses, you know, like bacteria and viruses and everything else on, like, through the microscope lens. A lot of people would have said that was crazy, right? Like, I think it was Lee Uenhoek or whatever, the dude who, I think he invented the microscope. Before the microscope was invented, the idea that there were things that were so small that you couldn't see, you would have sounded like a tinfoil hat raving lunatic walking around saying it, right? And before Copernicus, I think it was Copernicus, somebody look it up. Before Copernicus was like, hey, the planets revolve around the sun doesn't revolve around the planets, people are, man, like, man, that dog Copernicus, you can't listen to him at all. He thinks that the planets revolve around the sun. Everybody knows that the sun revolves around the planets. Or like Columbus, when Columbus is about to go find the New World, like, there were a lot of dudes watching his ship leave, and they were like, look at that idiot Columbus. He's going so far, he's going to just go off the side of the earth because they thought the earth was flat. And so there were a bunch of dudes sitting in the bay probably in their little fishing boats watching Columbus leave back in whatever it was, 1490s. They're like, man, this dude Columbus, he is crazy. He is going to go, like, he's going to go all the way to where the water just falls off the earth and we're never going to see this dude again. And then he finds the new world. So my point is, a lot of things that we think are crazy, conventional wisdom, is often wrong. And, like, I'm a big, sometimes people get upset with me for this. Like, I am willing to challenge conventional wisdom. And that's because I think conventional wisdom has so often been proven wrong over time. Data tells us that some of the least reliable people are experts. And so, like, when everybody was losing their mind about the coronavirus and they're like, man, millions of people are going to die from the coronavirus, I just looked at the data and I was like, the data doesn't reflect that that's true. Now, I wish nobody had died, and certainly the data was flawed coming out of China from the WHO. They didn't give us 100% the truth, and as a result, I think we should take the Olympics away from China, among many things. Like China and the WHO, they lied to us, and that helped to keep our data out of sorts. I think that led to a lot more people dead than if we had known the right data from the get-go. But I am skeptical of conventional wisdom. And I'm not, and I'm willing, and a lot of times it drives people crazy in my industry. I'm not willing, like when I see a story, I'm not willing to assume that it's 100% true. And more often than not on this program, if you listen to it, a lot of times we've been proven right because I've been like, I don't know if I buy this Michael Bennett story. I don't know if I buy this LeBron James racist graffiti story. I'm not sure I buy this Ezekiel Elliott committed domestic abuse when you look at all the evidence. Most people don't look at the actual evidence. They look at the headline and they just buy it. I tend to look behind the headline. But the headline here is UFOs exist. And behind the headline, the thing is UFOs exist. And it just got dropped right on us. We'll see what Petros Papadakis thinks about this.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I'm not sure where Erin Perini is right now, but she usually is working in Washington, D.C. in the White House. She has got a distinguished career resume already that I have in front of me right now. But we're going to start with sports here. But Erin, I want to actually first question for you. What's your normal day like? Do you have a normal day when you have a job like you do? You are a deputy communications director associated with the White House. Like, what time do you wake up? What time do you go to bed? Like, what is your normal day to day?
I mean, I try to maintain a schedule as much as I can for a sense of normalcy. It usually means I'm up around 4 a.m. to get a workout in and walk my dogs and then get to work because the day never ends. And so it's meetings and phone calls and talking with reporters and keeping people up to date and working stories that are longer or with different outlets. And the day wraps up, you know, after the president gives his briefing, we try to tie up any loose ends and wrap up the day from there. So it can be a very long day, but I'm very thankful for the opportunity.
All right. So I want to unpack a little bit of this. So you wake up, like your alarm goes off literally at 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
So I get up at 4:30. So you've got me by 30 minutes. But when your alarm goes off at 4 a.m., what's the first thing you do? Do you think, oh my God, I can't believe I'm getting up at 4 a.m.? Do you immediately hop out of bed? Like, I'm always kind of fascinated by what people do who get up that early. You said you walk your dog, you go to the gym. Like, where do you go to the gym? Like, at 4 a.m., like, what's your, like, starting that early? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah. In, like, pre-coronavirus, it meant getting up and going to Orange Theory because that's my normal workout.
Yes.
They have a 5 a.m. class, so I can knock it out super early. But when I get up, I grab my phone, make sure I haven't missed anything explosive while I slept, and then I take my dogs for their first walk of the day and feed them and then get my gym clothes on and get out the door to go. Now I'm using, like, at-home workout apps and going for runs, but I'm still getting up early to get all that done to try to maintain my schedule.
And then you get to the White House at what time?
I'm usually getting into the office between 7:30 and 8. 8 o'clock's the later side of that.
Okay, so what are they doing? Do you get your temperature taken every day when you go into the White House? Because I've heard, obviously, different things, I mean, just from reading media stories. But what kind of precautions are you a part of now going into the White House? Is there something different now than it would have been pre-coronavirus?
Yeah, folks who go into the White House do get their temperature taken every day just as a precaution to make sure that nobody is asymptomatic, but somehow now showing a temperature, but they feel fine, just as a necessary precaution. And obviously people maintain distancing as well to try and maintain the CDC guidelines on social distancing and increased hand washing and all that stuff.
So I know that there's controversy sometimes about the White House press briefings in general in the media at large. I like watching them. And the reason why I like watching them is I would rather watch the news happen myself than read somebody tell me what happened in the news. Do you think that makes me unique, or do you think there's lots of other people who have the same position as I do, where I want to hear from the president or Dr. Birx or Dr. Fauci myself, as opposed to having a media person tell me what they said? And by the way, this is not unique. I feel the same way about sports figures when they have press conferences. I would rather read the transcript of the press conference than I would watch the coverage of it, because I think I get better context by actually watching myself.
I mean, you should be glad to know you are not alone in that. And we actually see that really frequently, where people respond better when they hear directly from the president and directly from the experts without political analysis and filter over top. Because like you just mentioned, context is so critical when it comes to what is being said and the information that's being given by the president and the doctors and the leadership during the coronavirus. So yes, you're right. People do generally respond better when they are hearing directly from the president. And so he takes that opportunity to be able to not only get the facts out there, but push back on other things as well.
What's your Twitter feed like? I saw you now on Twitter, so I'm following you. But on a day-to-day basis, I feel a lot of times like I'm in battles all day long, you know, like just throwing punches, and I've been doing it for like 15 years now. But, you know, the world of sports, I give an opinion and people are like, oh, you're brilliant. Oh, you're an idiot, right? It's almost never anywhere in the middle. Like, oh, that's interesting. Let me think about it. It's like, oh, you're a genius or you're an idiot. That has to be, I've found to be the case almost entirely in politics too, right? Like there's very little middle of the ground. Oh, thanks for sharing that information. It's either like you're awful or you're a saint, right? You have to get that all the time on social media as well.
I mean, that is very true. It is very hot and cold, and I try and not read the comments on my tweets because people can be incredibly nasty. And so I just avoid that. But listen, this is part of what I do. This is what I do for a living. I put the information out there. I push the facts out there. And it's very rarely where I will get into a Twitter spat with someone. I can probably count on one hand and one finger, honestly, how often that is the way that I approach the conversation with reporters, because my job is to make sure that the story is getting out there and the facts are getting out there and that these stories get worked. And so when they go to publication, I don't have to call a reporter back or an outlet and say, you got that wrong. And especially with this president who holds no punches, and who, if you punch him, he'll punch back 10 times harder. People either love or they hate that. There's not a lot of in between. And so people feel, especially behind the media social filter or the social media filter, that they can say whatever they want. Just the other day, someone said that they wished that my entire family got COVID. And I have a doctor for a sister, an assistant district attorney for a sister. And so those are the kind of things that people say to me really way too often.
Yeah, we're talking to Erin Perini, and she's in the White House every day. So what's your relationship like? I always wonder about the behind the scenes, right? So I watch these White House press briefings. I'm in the media. A lot of the questions, candidly, I think are awful, right? And I don't mean that in like a political way. I just mean they don't seem that smart. They seem very focused on gotcha, you know, brand journalism, which is like, so-and-so said this. How would you respond to what so-and-so said, right? And there's very little like, hey, let's go into the data itself. Like the media seems like a lot of times they get distracted by bright and shiny objects. What's your relationship like as a general rule with the reporters who covered the White House? Would you say it's cordial? Would you say it's almost always contentious? Would you say like, hey, I like some of these people. We go out and we had beers back in the day when you could go out and have a beer. What is your relationship like behind the scenes, not in the public eye, with the reporters who cover the White House?
Well, honestly, I have really good working relationships with the White House press corps. It's something that I think it's part of what makes me serve well in my role on behalf of the president, is that I am able to talk with reporters and get them on the phone. But it's true, and to your point, when the press briefing turns on and those cameras turn on, there are a lot of reporters who are looking for contributor contracts, who want to write a book, who want that gotcha moment, and who want to seem like they are the one who really tripped up the president. And that's not what the point of those briefings are, and it's really sad to see how contentious they've become, because honestly, those press briefings are so reporters can work their stories and get answers straight from the source to be able to work stories. So gotcha questions, there was a really heinous one yesterday from a reporter during the briefing about, we're about to approach more people who have died from the coronavirus than in the Vietnam War. Do you deserve to be reelected? That's not trying to work a story. That's not trying to get the facts out there. That's not trying to help educate the American public on what is going on behalf of the federal government and public-private partnership, especially given yesterday's briefing. That is a gotcha question, and it's not journalism. And people who call themselves reporters who do that are really disingenuous to those who actually try to work stories.
We're talking to the Deputy Communications Director at the White House, Erin Perini. She's nice enough to join us. The White House has offered to put people on, and I appreciate that, as we talk about the intersection of the world of the coronavirus and sports. And we've talked a lot about that already in today's program. I want to go into the NFL draft that happened over the weekend. You grew up in Rochester, and you are a long-suffering Buffalo Bills fan. Do you believe the Bills will ever win a playoff game again?
Well, I mean, we've been in the playoffs two of the last 3 years.
Yes.
So I feel like
you've at least advanced the playoff, because I don't know how old you are, but it was, I think, going all the way back to like 1995 prior to the game down in Jacksonville where the Bills hadn't been in the playoffs. I mean, truly a really long-suffering fan base in what is a great city and a huge sports town overall, the Buffalo area.
Yeah. I mean, so I do think, I like Sean McDermott. I think he's the right coach for the Bills. I think the Pegulas are great, and I like Brandon Bean as well. So I think overall the organization is really strong in Buffalo. And now that the evil empire in the New England Patriots and Tom Brady is gone, we have a better chance than ever before, not only in terms of the team that we see there, but the culture that remains in Buffalo, because you're right, there really aren't sports towns that exist like Buffalo, New York. This is a place that it can be negative 20 and people are still outside watching football, and it can be downpouring snow and people still want to be there because they love their team so much. I mean, I remember a Bills Broncos game on Christmas Eve. It must have been 2011. I went, and all they kept showing was someone had a sign in the crowd that said, "Sorry, Tebow, Jesus left Buffalo 6 weeks ago." People just are always there, and it's great to be a Bills fan, and now more than ever before. I mean, I really like the direction with this team, and I actually think overall our draft picks were really solid.
Do you watch over the years, how many of those games against the Patriots did you watch when Brady and Belichick it was like they pulled the Bills fans' beating hearts out, you know, like a Temple of Doom style, over and over and over again? Did you watch a lot of those games, or were you just like, I don't even want to see the Patriots?
Oh, yeah. No, I watched a lot of them. Actually, one of my cousins had season tickets to the Bills. She got married, and the next day was Bills Patriots, and we went. And the Bills lost. But, I mean, honestly, you're a Buffalo Bills fan because you care about Western New York. You're a Bills fan because you remember the early 90s, or because you know that there's only one team that plays in the great state of New York, and that is the New York Buffalo Bills. So, like, you have so many great reasons to be a fan of the Buffalo Bills, and I love Buffalo. And so it's, you know, I don't want to get too excited about the season. I know better than that. I know better than to get too excited about where the Bills are. But honestly, Josh Allen, I really think, is a good fit overall, and I'm excited to see where the team goes.
We're talking to Deputy Communications Director Erin Perini in the White House. How much talk about sports in general is there in the White House? And what I mean by that is, you guys are dealing with incredibly stressful, overwhelming details every single day. And I would think that sports oftentimes offers a relief for you guys to talk about something in a non-threatening way. And as a result, I would think, I don't know, I've never worked in the White House, I've never spent any time there, but I would think sports is sometimes a place where conversations can go, where everybody kind of comes together, and it doesn't have to be incredibly contentious. Is that accurate?
Well, you know, the good thing is that coworkers at this level and in this world are really collegial, right? Like, we all get along. I actually really like the people I work with. But, you know, we do like to have a little bit of fun with each other. We do like to talk sports. When March Madness, you know, last year came around, everybody was excited, and those are the kind of things. I mean, sports offers a reprieve for every American. It's not any different if you work for the president or not. You get the opportunity to talk about something that isn't your everyday life. I mean, the Bills obviously gave up our first-round draft pick for Stephon Diggs, which I think was actually a brilliant move, and it's going to give something really great for Josh Allen to be able to work with. But Friday night, I was on a FaceTime with a bunch of friends on a Zoom call watching the rest of the Bills draft picks come through. And so people, even in and out of the White House, it gives us a sense of normalcy in what are extraordinary times to be able to, you know, the draft is great. Obviously, this Michael Jordan documentary that they're putting out 2x2 is another fantastic thing to kind of take our minds away from what's going on right now.
And I know I've watched the White House press briefings, as I said before, and the president wants sports back, but so does Andrew Cuomo, a Democratic governor. There have been a lot of public comments from him about the necessity of sports coming back. How important are sports being back to the nation's sense of normalcy and returning to more of that sense of normalcy?
Well, I think sports are going to play a huge role in that. You know, when they say play ball for the first pitch out at Yankee Stadium again, the crowd's going to go nuts, because sports are such – America is such a social culture by nature, and sports are a way for people to enjoy that social nature of who we are as Americans. If it's soccer, if it's football, if it's baseball, if it's whatever you love to watch, you get to do that in person. You get to root on your team, and you get to be able to, like, have fun. It's so important to the sense of normalcy and really who we are as a country. I mean, when people think about extraordinary moments in history, a lot of them do involve sports. Everybody remembers the pitch George W. Bush threw out at Yankee Stadium after 9/11. Those are iconic moments, and it's because sports are so in the heart of the American people and the culture. So if it's Yankee Stadium or New Era Field or Rentschler Field or Camp Randall Stadium, people want to get back to their lives, and they want to get back to knowing that they can root on their team, root for their universities, and feel like themselves again. Because being cooped up at home, watching the 1999 National Championship basketball game over and over again is great, but it's not the same as going out and, you know, sitting through six overtimes at Madison Square Garden with UConn and Syracuse.
You're a UConn grad. You mentioned the 99 National Championship. Is that your favorite sports memory?
Oh, no. My favorite sports memory was the quarterfinals Big East tournament, Kemba Walker versus Pitt. He did the step back Kemba buzzer beater. That was 5 games in 5 days at the Garden on the walk to the national championship, and it was on Kemba's back. And that moment, I was working in the state of New York at the time in an office with Notre Dame and Syracuse and Providence alums all in the office, and this was like the Big East at the time. And I just went berserk because it was during lunch, and that is by far my favorite UConn basketball memory was that quarterfinal game.
Aaron Perini, you have been outstanding. By the way, I'm a Titans fan, and it was a lateral. we appreciate Aaron. I'll put out her Twitter handle so you guys can go follow her. We come back, we'll close out hour number two. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Petros Papadakis joins us, AM 570 LA Sports. Petros, you see that they dropped the UFO videos yesterday?
Yes, I did. I guess they're trying to keep people inside for a little longer. Curiosity has its own reason for existence, Clay.
So are you a UFO guy? Like, did you believe in them before the videos were released by the Pentagon?
Well, I'm not going to say that I don't think UFOs exist. I guess I do. It's a really big universe, and I always kind of go by the saying from Shakespeare's Hamlet, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Of course, there could be all kinds of crazy stuff flying around. I mean, we got crazy stuff flying around, but, you know, I try not to concentrate on it because, you know, I have other things to do.
That are way more important than UFOs?
Well, I don't know if they're more important than UFOs, but they're more important to me. You know, just like there's things more important for the crow on the power line or, you know, a possum running around on the ground. I don't know what they are. I think it's interesting that the government had all kinds of stuff and didn't let anybody know in the first place, and why it's coming out now, and it's an election year and all that crazy stuff and all the conspiracy theories that go along with that. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you there's no such thing as anything, Clay. How the hell do I know?
Wouldn't it be perfect for 2020 if we get through the coronavirus and everybody's like, man, I'm glad we can just get back to normal, and then aliens showed up? I mean, this would be like, for of all time years, be like,
well,
hey,
what kind of aliens are we talking about?
Hopefully, I mean, friendly ones. I mean, the last thing I want to do is go from, hey, we're all going to die from the coronavirus, to, okay, most of us are going to be fine. And the next thing you know, the aliens show up.
I hope all your tweets become about like alien diplomacy.
I think I'd be pretty good about alien diplomacy. Like, if you had to pick somebody to get along with the aliens and interact with them, I think I'd do pretty good.
Well, it really depends on what kind of aliens we're talking about. I mean, if we're talking about the people from V who look all weird, but they're trying to blend with us and be all cool. I saw a movie the other day with John Goodman. It was about, like, post-alien invasion Chicago, and the aliens all live underground, and they control people and wipe out towns if the people mess around, and they only talk to certain politicians and diplomats. I don't want that. And then there's the other one.
Came and they were like, hey, you were just like a big video game for us, and we just want to say hi. Like, everybody in, you know, like everybody in America, everybody all over the world, you know, like, what if we found out that we were just like so inferior, like, of entertainment that,
well, there's the other way too, if you think about it. Remember the guy that made The Hobbit made like the alien movie District 9 or whatever, where we're the oppressors of the aliens.
Yeah, well,
you know, so you can never tell based on alien movies just what kind of alien you're gonna get.
I'm just saying, what if we're like,
what about the alien from Alien?
Remember,
you know, that's a bad alien. One.
Well, I was gonna say, like, what if we, you know, we have in you know, this country, a lot of people who have like aquariums, or a lot of people who have like an ant farm. You know, and like, you can just sit and watch the species there, the ant and the fish, which we are smarter than. Like, they just kind of swim around and entertain us, or they, you know, climb around in the ant farm and entertain us. What if that's us to the aliens?
Yeah, I get it. I've seen the Truman Show.
You understand the metaphor here?
Yes, I am not. I am. It's early, but I'm hanging on to the thread.
Yeah.
If you woke me up to ask me a bunch of what if questions about aliens, I'm not saying that that's. I'm against that, but I don't know really where we can go. I mean, all I have to reference aliens is movies. I'm not a space traveler. I believe the government knows all kinds of stuff.
Let me pause you here. You oftentimes come on the show and complain when I ask you sports questions, because you're like, I don't know, I'm just a sport. What are you asking? And now here I'm giving you one of life's great questions that we just got a huge bit of evidence on. Are we the only life that could exist? And you're like, oh, you should be asking me about Oregon going back to school. Like, which would you prefer?
I don't know. I mean, but you're not interviewing Philip K. Dick. You know, I'm not the guy that wrote Blade Runner over here. I'm not really that sure about aliens, Clay.
I told you right at the beginning.
I don't really know what the government knows. There's all kinds of stuff out there. It doesn't fascinate me that much because, you know, I have my own problems.
What are your problems right now? Can you leave
my
your house?
My kids are annoying.
Yeah.
I sleep with a mask. half the people in my neighborhood just walk the streets like zombies all day and don't acknowledge cars that are actually going to work as essential sports talk radio personnel as myself.
Yeah.
My outer right knee hurts from too much yoga in my sister's rental property basement. There's a lot of issues.
How do you fix the knee?
I just got to flex my foot more when I do figure fours and things of that nature.
So what do you think about this huge controversy in California, where I think you're still in L.A. County, if I'm not mistaken, right? You're not.
Yes,
quite.
I live in L.A. County.
So you're, but you're close to Orange County, relatively speaking.
Sure. I live in southern L.A. County. For a long time, though, I lived in L.A. City, in San Pedro, which is very close to where I live in L.A. County now.
So from where you are, the beaches are closed, but you can probably drive, 30, 45 minutes to the south, and the beaches are open in Orange County, right?
Well, one beach is open in Orange County.
Okay.
And that beach is connected to other beaches. So
everybody can walk from one to the other once they get on.
Right. Like you saw Joel Klatt's tweet about Newport Beach. Like, this is in Newport. You know, I mean, and Joel is kind of new to the area, relatively. And it might not technically be Newport, but, you know, it borders Huntington Beach, where people can go. Or Bolsa Chica, I think people can go. I mean, the beaches people can go to, people are going to, because it's really hot and people are outside. You know, people are walking around. Maybe they want to see the aliens.
So that this brings home to me the question here, which I think is a good one, which is obviously – the Lakers even reached out, and you may have seen this, to...
Oh, that's pathetic.
Taking the money or reaching out about the El Segundo facility?
Taking the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a sec. But but they reached out and said, hey, do you think we can open up our facility somewhat soon, because there are a lot of people out there in other NBA towns and states where these facilities theoretically could open up on May 8th. And I think that the Lakers, at least in that way, are emblematic of a lot of people, I would imagine, in L.A. and in California at large, who are like, hey, we're kind of ready to get back to normal here.
Yeah.
Do you pick up that vibe?
Yeah, you're on top of that. Whether it's right or wrong, people are ready, you know, to start moving. And I think some people are looking around at each other and saying, you know, are we really waiting for the mayor to tell us it's okay to see our family again? I mean, it's complicated, obviously, but there's a lot of restlessness, I think. And then that's why you see, you know, the beach is so packed. But then on the flip side of that, you know, you have the people shaming, you know, like TMZ or something will put out a picture and be like, all these people are going to be sick and dying, you know, within 2 weeks. And then the whole argument starts again. But I do think it's a lot different vibe than it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt at all about that. And I think it's kind of fascinating. The government, and I'm not trying to go all Thomas Jefferson on you here, but the government derives its authority from the consent of the governed. And a lot of people miss that. If at some point the larger population decides, hey, wait a minute, these rules don't make any sense, then politicians have to change the rules, right? Like, you can't go arrest the entire beach when there are tens of thousands of people there. You can't just start pulling over every single person on the 405. Like, as people are making the decision, it's 95 degrees out, we've been locked up for 6 weeks, and the overall infection rate and death rate in California has been nowhere near what everybody else said. Plus, Texas is opening up, Georgia's opening up, all these other states, Utah, which isn't very far from us. Like, at some point, every state ends up looking similar to every other state, I think. Do you agree with that, too?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is America, after all. And I think you're right. I think at a certain point, you know, political stances are going to have to give way to, you know, human life and whatever the data is. And I'm not a scientist or any kind of social engineer, but I can say this. People are restless. You know, people are super restless in this state. And look, big business is closed down. I mean, that's crazy. And for that to happen, like, there had to be a lot of real fear and deep concern. But big business can only stop for so long, and they have a lot of lobby and sway in the world of government as well. Corporate America does. And at a certain point, they're going to want to open back up. But all the sports stuff that you talk about that you ended up being pretty right about, like the utopian societies of sport in these uninfected states and stuff like that, that's just a cash grab for the money, for the TV deal money. Like the NBA's got to get to 70 games to get their money. And I understand that it'd be great to have sports on TV, but that's nothing about the fan. That's everything about just getting the TV money so the rich can get richer. And it doesn't really inject into society, I think, what sports really do for us, which is a kind of a financial platform for everybody involved. And I don't like that as much, as you know.
Can you come back with us at the end? Because I want to ask you about several Pac-12 universities have basically said, hey, we're going to be open for the fall, what that could mean for college football. Can you come back?
Yes, and you can ask me what my favorite alien movie of all time is.
I'll definitely do that as well.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Let's go ahead and bring in Petros Papadakis. All right, Petros, I said I was going to ask you about this. Bunch of different Pac-12 schools, Washington State, Oregon among them, basically saying, hey, we're going to open. In California, I don't know that the governor has really said anything or the mayors, but with the Pac-12 schools, USC, Cal, and Stanford, if all the other Pac-12 schools are opening, doesn't California have to open too?
Well, if all the other conferences play, doesn't the Pac-12 have to play too?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same question. And I think way back when this whole thing started, just as a sports guy, you asked me, you know, what I thought was going to happen when sports came back. And at that point, you know, we were like, in 15 days, you know. And I always thought that it was not going to be like, obviously, a garage door opening and the whole world flooding back together. You know, some people are legitimately afraid to go back to their normal lives. You know, some people don't want to. You know, they want to stay inside. So it will be a slow, I think, kind of falling. But I think as more people come back and as long as, you know, there's not this crazy outbreak that they told us to be afraid of, I think everybody out here on the West Coast will eventually follow suit because, I mean, it's not New York. It's just not. So I think that's the case.
But it is kind of significant that state institutions in Oregon and Washington, given the fact that there's supposed to be this West Coast connection between those states, would make the decision, hey, we're going to be back on campus, right?
Absolutely. I saw that Oregon said that, and I kind of took a deep breath, and I first kind of double-checked it because it's so hard to, like, look at headlines and read stuff now. And, you know, how old was this person that died? You know, what were their pre-existing conditions? You know, all this crazy stuff, you know, that we've taught ourselves to look for in this time. I looked at it, like, 3 or 4 times to make sure it was real, and it kind of gave me hope that we would have college football because if students can be on campus, then we can certainly have college football, I would guess. And obviously that's part of the way I make my living. So it's important to me. And just like other things are very important to other people. But that was, I thought, very encouraging, yeah.
What about the Lakers taking the $4 million?
Some idiot there must have applied for it. I mean, I can't imagine Jeannie Buss knowing that that was going on. And I get it. They're a business. They're eligible for it. But they're worth $4 billion, and it's a bad look.
Yeah.
And there's just no doubt about that. And, you know, you'd be deeply surprised at the giant corporations around L.A. that I know of that don't want to pay rent.
Yeah.
Even though they can. And it's sad. I mean, I know my father owns, you know, some apartment buildings. My family has for years. And, you know, he forgave rent for a couple months. You know, so small business people are doing it different, it really feels like. And that also makes me feel like, you know, things should open up soon, you know, if that's the case. Because, you know, some places just get to be open because they have a government lobby. And, you know, it's just odd. It's just odd to imagine that you'd be waiting for the mayor to tell you it's okay to see your friends and family. Like, you're really scared, but once the mayor says it's okay, it's kind of, it's odd, because I don't really let the mayor control anything else in my life in that kind of way. But,
I'm with you, that's the time we live in. I think there are a lot of people out there listening to us right now that, like, the entire distinction between essential and non-essential business is non-existent, because you know what an essential business is? For that small business owner, every business is essential. And so for the people that he and she employ, it's essential. There's no such thing as a non-essential business. Petros Papadakis, thanks for hanging out with us as always. Listen to him, AM 570 LA Sports. Many of you will be in the afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks to all our guests, Aaron Perini, to Shannon Spake, and to Petros Papadakis. Thank them. Go download the podcast. This has been Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.